Good morning. I'm Christine Leffler, your lay leader today. And for our opening reading, I have a poem for you, big surprise. It's called Improvement by Danish Lemaris. The optometrist says, "My eyes are getting better each year. Soon, he'll have to lower my prescription. What's next? A light step that I had at age 6? All the gray hairs turning back to brown? Skin taut as a drum? My improved eyes and I walked around town and celebrated. We took in the letters of the marquee, the individual leaves filling out the branches of the sycamore, an early moon. So much goes downhill, our joints wearing out at every mile, the delicate folds of the eardrum exhausted from years of listening. I'm grateful for small victories. The way the heart still beats time in the cathedral of the ribs. And the mind, watching its parade of thoughts enter and leave, begins to see them for what they are. Jugglers, fire swallowers, acrobats tossing their batons in the air." Our next hymn, a little trivia, was written by Joyce Pauley on a hill above Eugene, Oregon, overlooking the Willamette Valley.
Like in a big, busy downtown. And the country friend said, "Wait, can you hear that cricket? And the city friend was like, what? There aren't crickets here in downtown Portland. And they went, but the friend said, oh, I'm sure there's a cricket. And so there was actually some overgrown grass growing there. And the friend walked right to it. He's like, it's right here. And looked down in the grass and saw the little cricket who was singing their song. And at that point, the friend from the city could hear the cricket. Wow. They continued down the street. Wow, said the city friend. You guys must have such great hearing in the country. I could never hear that. And the friend said, I don't think it has anything to do with hearing. And she took a handful of coins out of her pocket and dropped them on the ground. And suddenly people all around were startled and were looking, and because they'd heard the coins drop. The friend picked up the coins and said, I think we just hear what we pay attention to. That is the end of our story today. So we can sing the children out to their classes.
When I pause and reflect on what I'm grateful for in my life, which is something I'm trying to incorporate as a daily practice, my gratitude for the community here at WIF is always very high on my list. I'm deeply grateful for the friends I've made here, a chance to make a contribution to a community, and the opportunity to stand before you and read poems every once in a while. And if we could say our affirmation together. Let us be grateful when we are able to give, for many do not have that privilege. Let us be grateful for those who share their gifts with us, for we are enriched by their giving. And let us be grateful even for our needs, so that we may learn from the generosity of others. The ushers could come forward.
Gather together, we take a moment to remember the joys and sorrows of our lives. This is important to do together because the truth of human life is it is a mix of joys and sorrows. There are no other ways to live. And so it is important for us in this place where we think about life and how to make sense of it and how to live it well, that we remember each and every week. Life is made up of joys and sorrows. and that we can have community who holds us and holds us and celebrates our joys, and we can have community who commiserates and supports us and listens to us when life is hard. And so you are welcome to come forward and drop a stone into the water for your joy or your sorrow. If you would like to say something about it, you're welcome to share that into the room. We do ask that you keep it short, one sentence or so, to share with the community what's on your heart. Betsy will, we'll just take a moment to think about what those are, and Betsy will begin to play. And then we're changing the rotation for people who have been here. We're going to come up this way and go this way. The reason we're doing this is because the people at home, I know it's a little scary, and change is hard, but it's because the people who are at home are better able to see the ritual because of the way our cameras are placed. So it's very just technical. So. But it won't be the same ritual and have the same meaning. So.
That have been really affirming to me, so.
This is a candle of joy for Betsy's 79th birthday. Happy birthday, Betsy. And these are for, this last stone is for all the joys and sorrows that remain in our hearts. So we will now spend some time in meditation, reflection, and prayer, as whatever your tradition is. So I'd like to start with just a deep breath. And release it. If you want to relax, it's better to bring the air out longer than you bring it in. It relaxes our system. Sometimes it's hard to remember to just breathe. So right now I'm going to pose some questions. And I want you just to hold the questions very gently. It's going to be hard, but I don't want your brain to start chewing on those questions, fussing with them, turning them around. Instead of thinking about the answers, I want you to pay attention to your breathing. either as the air comes in your nose or comes into your belly, however your breathing works or attending to it works for you. So your mind will, it's going to go, blah, 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 it's going to start talking to you, and that is totally normal, and then you just pay attention to your breath again. You don't really say anything to it. Just let it go. So that's going to happen. We're going to do this for like 30 seconds, and you'll probably have that transition like 10 times or something. It's just hard work. So, but what I want you to do with the questions, I want you to just let them hover around you. I want them give them time to sink into your unconscious. Because it's in our unconscious or in the creative spaces of the world that oftentimes we get the deep answers we're looking for. So here's the questions. What are your primary, ultimate commitments? What sustains you when life is difficult or plodding? What inspires you to be your best self and act in ways that make you proud? What transforms you when you cannot will yourself to transform? Let's take some time in silence. Remember, watch your breath. Move in to meditation on breathing. Gail will lead us. The words will be on the screen.
Those reminders to breathe, always so good. Can't get enough of them in the course of a day. Assurance by William Stafford. You will never be alone. You hear so deep a sound when autumn comes. Yellow pulls across the hills and thrums. Or the silence after the lightning, before it says its names. And then the clouds, wide-mouthed apologies. You were aimed from birth. You will never be alone. Rain will come, a gutter filled, an Amazon, long aisles. You never heard so deep a sound. Moss on rocks and years. You turn your head. That's what the silence meant. You're not alone. The whole wide world pours down.
The Lord is
shake me. She has said she won't forsake me. I'm in her hand. She's at the table before me, in the presence of my foes. She anoints my head with oil, and my cup overflows. Surely goodness and kindness will follow me all the days of my life. And I will live in her house forever, forever and ever. Glory be to our mother and daughter, to the Holy of Holies. And as it was in the beginning, and now and ever shall be, world without end. Amen.
People sometimes say to me, Unitarian Universalism is not a religion. People who are Unitarian Universalists will say that to me. People who are not Unitarian Universalists will say that to me. And it's possible this is how you think about it, too. And I imagine, I don't really know why people say this, but I often think it is because people think of religion as being a belief in a supernatural God and a particular set of creeds that are combined with practicing a particular set of rituals and traditions. And since Unitarian Universalism, Universalists rejected creeds over 400 years ago and gave up on the centrality of a supernatural God over 100 years ago, and are always tweaking our rituals and traditions, people sometimes draw the conclusion that we are not a religion. But this is not true. We are a religion because we ask religious questions and we try to live those answers. The essential questions are, the essential religious questions are, what is your ultimate commitment or commitments? And what sustains us, inspires us, and transforms us when we've lost the capacity to transform ourselves? We are all ultimately committed to something, usually more than one thing. We are made this way. We need stories about life that allows us to create meaning and focus our attention and our activities. Humans evolved, after all, to be parts of social and natural networks, not to be individuals. Individual humans cannot survive on their own. Due to our evolution, we literally need to know what we are a part of and where we fit into it in order to seamlessly function with other human beings around us. As an aside, this is a huge problem in the United States right now. People are living with such radically different stories about what is happening and what we is required in response to what is happening that we struggle to share this country. Right now, in the middle of hurricane recovery, stories are circulating about the dangers of FEMA workers, how the survivors aren't going to receive any help, and how government officials unleashed the hurricanes in order to destroy their enemies. People are living in this horrible dystopian world, shattered by storms, afraid of those who reach out their hands with help, becoming angry, isolated, and scared. This is their story, the one they are living, and affects how they feel about the world and what they will do. And it is radically a very different story than most of us live in. So our ultimate commitments are how we create meaning within and on the edges of the larger cultural stories. For example, a really normal story told in our culture is that if you go to college and do the right things, you can get a job, climb the ladder, and be successful. Success is then measured by a job title and a salary, which you can't actually tell anyone your salary because it's considered to be in truly bad taste. So instead, you have to have all the right belongings and live in the right neighborhood to demonstrate that you indeed are successful. In our society, many people make their ultimate commitment to success and to money. They spend their life energy on getting the right job, the right title, and all the right stuff. But lots and lots of ultimate commitments are possible within our society. It might be to our families, or a particular vocation, or to our art form. Sometimes our commitments are to values, like care, or peace, or justice. And sometimes the commitment is to God, or enlightenment, or creativity. Typically, we are deeply committed to more than one thing, and these might change over time. But it can't be many things. We can't have many, many commitments. We can, but we don't usually have many ultimate primary commitments. And some commitments, because there's just not enough time in our lives to have a lot. And some are simply incompatible with one another. This is why Jesus, who was a great religious teacher, said, "You can't serve God and money." Religions are cultural systems that exist to support people as they live out their spiritual value and meaning commitments. They support people as they tend to the parts of their lives that sustain, inspire, and transform them so that they can truly live their ultimate commitments. And yes, most religions do have a very specific plan for that. They tell you what the ultimate commitment is. In Buddhism, the ultimate commitment is to achieving enlightenment. In Christianity, it is to God and to Jesus. In paganism, it is a profound connection to the natural world and the natural world's transformative qualities. Then the religion tells you what will sustain, inspire, and transform you. In Buddhism, they tell you that this is the practice of meditation and living Buddhist teachings in your daily life. That will sustain, inspire, and transform you. In Christianity, it is the worship of God and Jesus and following the teachings of the Bible. In paganism, it is the rituals and practice that connect people to the flow of life. And those specific religious plans have worked and still work for so many people. They allow people to connect to what is larger than themselves and help people manage the challenges and joys of life. And that is one reason they've been around for so long. They work. Unitarian Universalism has an entirely different flavor. Instead of following paths that are given to us by an external person, we say, or external tradition, we say that each of us, each person, has the capacity to discover their own ultimate commitments and to discover what sustains, inspires, and transforms them so they can live into those commitments. We believe there is no one right way to do this. We also believe that everyone is loved. Everyone is worthy. Everyone is saved. However, we are not a faith that believes anything goes. I've heard that as well, too. Because we actually believe that the ultimate commitments that you make matter. They are not all equal. Some commitments create more meaning and connection than other commitments. Some commitments improve the lives of the person who holds them and help communities flourish better than other commitments. Commitments to love and kindness and compassion create more life and joy than commitments to hate, control, and greed. Unitarian Universalists believe that the ultimate commitments that we each make and live truly matter. But I want you to hear this because it's very important and not true in many faiths, but it is true in other faiths. We also believe that no matter what commitment you have made, or if you even know what your ultimate commitments are, because sometimes we don't, that every single person is loved and worthy and saved. Every person. And that's you. Most of us live really busy, distracted lives. Our society keeps us running as fast as we can to pay the bills, keep up appearances, stay healthy, and to have all that cool stuff and fun that consumer culture dangles enticingly before us. When we are not running, we have created a myriad of ways to just stop and numb out. Television is brilliant. Social media clicking, alcohol, drugs, too much food, shopping. There's endless possibilities. So it is quite rare, in fact, to just slow down and pay attention to our actual lives and what we actually are committed to. Even if we were very clear at one time about our commitments, we can get off track so easily. I mean, all the big dollars in our society are focused on getting us to make our largest commitments to things and services that we have to buy. Our economy only works, after all, if each of us believes that the most important human commitment should be to expressing our unique selves by buying objects or services or activities. Media and advertisers are always there, just like the big brother Americans used to be so afraid of. They know just what to say and to do to get us to respond because they have spent so much money and time trying to figure out how to do that. I mean, I imagine if we as a people spent that much research time and money solving climate issues, we'd be a lot better off than we are. Meanwhile, there are a bunch of poorly funded, ragtag organizations like Unitarian Universalist congregations and other religious communities, some nonprofits, some think tanks, and some educational institutions saying, hey, there actually are some other possibilities for human flourishing, other kinds of commitments we can make. But it's really hard to keep anyone's attention, even our own. But still, here we are, part of that counterculture, keeping on, keeping saying that the commitments we make matter. All of us have gathered together because whether we've ever articulated to ourselves our ultimate commitments or not, something has drawn each of us into this community where we gather weekly to uphold positive values and open ourselves to what is holy and creative and meaningful in the world. We can have more power and meaning in our lives when we do attend to our commitments and care for whatever it is that sustains, inspires, and transforms us. So I invite all of us to slow down and pay attention to our lives. Let's discover what our commitments really are. And if the commitments we're currently living are really the ones that serve us and our families and our communities, let's pay close attention to what sustains us, inspires us, and transforms us so we're able to live the true commitments of our heart. We need to give ourselves the time to be silent, to not be distracted, to not be numbed out, to be attentive. It turns out it's not that hard to figure out what your ultimate commitments actually are. You just have to spend some time tracking the way you spend your time and the way you spend your money. And by what you think about, if you could sort of track that. Our thoughts move pretty fast. But if you can sort of attend to the way the majority of your life energy is going, those are your true commitments. And this could be very revealing about what matters in our lives the most. And sometimes it can be a little uncomfortable. And I have to tell you that I have a lot of curiosity about my own killer Sudoku addiction and what that is telling me about my life. But the facts are, it's helpful to take stock because then we get to make choices instead of just letting the commitments work unconsciously through us, filling our time and taking our money and our attention. So while we're paying attention to what we're really committed to, it's important to really pay attention to what sustains you when your life is difficult or just not working the way you want it to. What keeps you going? And you can think about, if nothing hard is happening in your life now, when hard things have happened, what is it that kept you from falling completely apart? Or if you did fall completely apart, what got you back together? And then the next step of though is, how do we tend to those things that sustain, inspire, and transform us? So if it's our community and our friends that keep us going when things are hard, do we tend to that community? Do we make sure that the community that can help us when life is hard flourishes? That our friendships are nurtured and flourishing? If it is our breath that brings us peace and sustenance, do we spend time just breathing and paying attention to our breath? If we are inspired by stories of people doing courageous things, are we making the habit of finding those stories, paying attention to those stories? Do we try to nurture the courageous within us? The natural world so often sustains us. That's Unitarian Universalism, I think. Really, so many people. So are we taking care of it? Are we making sure that the natural world is flourishing as it needs to be? If it's poetry or music or sacred texts that sustain and inspire us, do we devote our time to them? Do we ensure that they will exist in the future? When we actually begin to slow down and notice and listen to our lives, we can make changes. If we want to, if we feel like our commitments are really the ones we want to be living, we can consider, how would we shift to live a different commitment? And how would we tend to what sustains and inspires us? What shifts do we need to make in our own lives, the way we spend our money and our time, what we think about and grapple with? But we have to notice first. It's like this morning's story. We do notice what we decide to pay attention to. I was really lucky on sabbatical because I did pay attention to my life. And so I'm going to share some of my discoveries at this moment, because believe me, all these things do change over time. You every once in a while do need to check in and see where you're at. So, and mine are going to be different than yours, because we are different. And as Unitarian Universalists, we believe that's okay. We expect that. The answers to these questions will be different. So what are my ultimate commitments? The first is the holy relational aspect of life that keeps me humble, curious, growing, healing, and engaged in helping others flourish. And the second is to my family and friends. What sustains me, inspires me, and transforms me is primarily creativity, a deep, deep faith that new possibilities are always arriving and possible, that as things decay and break down, new things are possible to build. I think that is the fundamental truth of the universe, personally, but that's my theology. But there are other things too. I am sustained by the people I love and who love me, by walking and breathing, by beauty, and by the deep silence that bathes me when my mind stills, and by a sense of the holy in the world. I am inspired by people who grapple with the hard situation, seeking win-win and both and by people having fun and doing the hard right next thing. By crisp, clear thinking, the curiosity of the very young, and people late in life with their humor still intact. So what transforms me? Feeling loved, someone who is next to me as I go through the hard thing, grace, prayer, and always, always creativity, the bringing together of the old into the new. I don't think Unitarian Universalism is an easy faith. I, many times, in fact, have yearned for a faith that would just tell me how to steer my life towards the best results. Unfortunately, it is not my nature to accept anything just because somebody told it to me. I have to wrestle with it, check it out, find out what feels and seems true to me. So here I am. I'm a Unitarian Universalist to my very heart and soul. And in some ways, it can be really lonely finding our way when there's no marked path. But the nice, best news of Unitarian Universalism is we don't do it alone. That's our gift. Each of us, just by the way humans are, live in the narrow world of our own stories and our own perspectives. We need other people to find our way. We need somebody to say, hey, look over here. This is working pretty well. Let's try this. Let's do this. Our tradition makes central covenant, not creeds, for this very reason. We say to one another, we are going to discover meaning and how to sustain, inspire, and transform ourselves together within healthy, caring relationships. And it is our covenants that give us clear guidelines on how we are going to be in those relationships. They help us learn those healthy, transformative ways of being together. So we covenant to be together in ways that support our mutual growth and discovery. We are all together on this journey. We're considering, helping, supporting, imagining, teaching, experimenting, having fun, in all the ways. We are together learning the ways of loving, relational community so we can each return to who we are and what we are. And we can return to the land of our soul. So let us rise and sing our hymn 1011, Return Again. Towards the back and sing our closing reflection, Carry the Flame.